background on this. Kashana Jean Moore in Commonwealth of Virginia. Your Honor. Ms. Hayden, you want to reserve any time for rebuttal, sir?
5 minutes, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may begin when ready.
May it please the court, my name is Charles Hayden, and I'm here on behalf of Kashana Jean Moore, who entered a conditional plea of guilty to one count of unlawful wounding, which specifically preserved the issue of whether the unlawful wounding charge should have been dismissed as a violation of Virginia Code Section
19.2-294. Doesn't the prohibition of 19.2-294 forbids multiple prosecution of offenses springing from the same criminal act?
That's correct.
So we need to determine whether or not these two offenses arose from the same criminal act.
That's correct. And that's exactly it.
And isn't the test of whether they're two separate acts is whether the same evidence is required to sustain them?
I think the test is it the same act? And that's looking at the specific...
Well, you're saying driving is the same act, and that's it. That's the end of
driving,
the case.
Driving into this Edward Neal, whether that act constituted a violation of two separate statutes. If the same act be a violation of two or more statutes, conviction under
the
one statute.
The Virginia Supreme Court in Estes, 212 Virginia, has held one occasion of driving an automobile may give rise to several acts and offenses if the evidence sustaining the offenses is not the same.
Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that the evidence here is clearly a single act. When the Commonwealth, for example, cited in its Jefferson case, the Jefferson versus Commonwealth case, it cited that as an analogous case. But I would submit the Jefferson case very clearly supports my position. The Commonwealth said, while the situs and the time of the crimes were the same, the nature of the act was different. But the Jefferson case specifically ruled that the when this individual carried a firearm as a felon, that was one act that was a crime. It could be prosecuted for it. When the person then subsequently acted to conceal the weapon, that's a separate crime. That's separate. It's not the same act. Concealing is different from the act of simply possessing the firearm. And so the Jefferson case specifically noted the nature of the specific act peculiar to each prosecution is distinct. The attendant acts were decidedly different, unquote. So the one case that the...
Basically what the case is saying is that while there may be some common elements in different crimes, it doesn't necessarily pronounce that you're going to have a block burger problem. And in this case, the court specifically said, the analysis was pretty spot on, while driving a motor vehicle is a common feature of both statutory offenses, the same evidence would not produce a conviction for both offenses. The conviction for the reckless driving did not require proof that the defendant or the appellant operated the vehicle with the intent to maliciously wound the victim with the intent to disable or kill them, pursuant to 18.2-51. So the trial court actually did the Blockberger analysis for us. Where would you argue with that analysis?
The Blockberger analysis is not the appropriate analysis. Blockbuster is noted in the Jefferson case, for example, that Blockbuster... Thank you.
Blockbuster is a place where you used to buy movies that doesn't exist anymore.
Thank you.
We have Netflix now.
I have committed this error in the past, but it's locked into my mental.
So have I.
But the Blockberger test asks whether two offenses they're looked at in the abstract to determine whether one offense requires proof of a fact, the other does not. And they don't look at the facts of the particular case under review. By contrast, and the judge in this case specifically said, I'm employing the Blockberger test to analyze the situation. But by contrast, as noted in the Jefferson case, the 19.2-294, this former jeopardy protection afforded there, speaks to the acts of the accused, not the elements of the offense.
The actual acts of the accused.
Yes, the actual acts. And the act here is the same in both cases, namely driving her car into Edwards.
I'm sorry.
In 2011, this court issued an opinion in Davis versus Commonwealth, which seems to be a similar analysis, opinion by Judge Frank. I think I was on the panel as well. And basically involved a DUI and then a manslaughter. And the court decided that because the person was driving under the influence, before he hit the victim, Mr. White in that case, Davis hit White, that two separate offenses had occurred. Here, she was driving at least briefly improperly before she hit the victim. So why wouldn't Davis, this court's opinion in Davis, govern our result here as well?
It's hard for me to see how this, that there is a separate act here that is supposed to have occurred. The act that is the subject that's violating two separate statutes here is the act of driving the car into Mr. Neal. One act. And in the one case, the statute asks whether the driving was done in a reckless or improper manner so as to endanger life, limb, or property. And under the unlawful statute asks whether the driving into him was done with the intent to maim, disfigure, disable, or kill. But it's the one act of driving into the man that is the offense. And I think it's really employing an incredible degree of formalism to try to separate out the one act into two separate acts. It was one act to start driving in its direction, and then a second act to actually hit the guy with her car.
Nothing in her driving before she hit him.
Right,
that was improper.
She just drove into the guy, and that was one act. And to try to chop up the logic here and say, well, no, we can try to separate this into a separate act of, well, she put the car into gear, that was one act. And then she pressed the accelerator, that was a separate act. And then she made contact, that was a third. That's logic chopping. It eviscerates the statute, eviscerates the purpose of the legislative intent for this statute.
The Commonwealth is alleging that because she put the car in gear, she pressed on the accelerator, that leads to improper driving. But wasn't there an allegation at least that the way, where she turned or what she did before she hit him, the direction in which she was going, was improper driving?
I don't know where that is in the record. I mean, I never saw anything to suggest that there were two separate acts. I don't think the Commonwealth alleged two separate acts. All they did was apply a statutory analysis of, are the elements of the offenses different? But that, of course the elements of the offense are different. They're two separate statutes. But it's a single act that has violated two separate statutes. They weren't simultaneously prosecuted. The judge, in his opinion letter, noted they were, it was a successive prosecution.
Well, let me ask you this, counsel. What do you believe is the legislative intent of an improper driving statute? And then I'm going to ask you, what do you believe the legislative intent of an unlawful wounding statute, this unlawful wounding statute is?
Legislative intent is to criminalize certain forms of conduct in both cases.
What is the legislative intent in an improper driving case?
To prosecute a driving that endangers the life or limb of another, when it's done in a way that is reckless or to a lesser degree culpable, is simply improper.
Okay, I accept that. That's a reasonable definition. What is the legislative intent of an unlawful wounding statute?
That is to criminalize conduct that where bodily injury is done with the intent to maim, disfigure, disable, or kill.
Okay, and I think that's a reasonable definition. And so wouldn't it be fair to say that the legislative intent of those two statutes are different?
The elements are different. They're both seek to criminalize certain forms of behavior. And
so if that is indeed the case, and I appreciate you going down this road with me, if that is indeed the case, then do we not have a multiple conviction problem?
There is a multiple conviction problem here, where the legislature has clearly said that where one act constitutes a violation of two separate statutes, a conviction under for one offense bars a prosecution or proceeding under the other act, even though the legislature fully recognizes that sometimes one act can constitute violations of two separate offenses that the legislature intends to criminalize. It also has a superseding principle here of the 1294.
In this instance, based upon your analysis, the instrumentality of the criminal conduct is the car. Let's talk about another example. Suppose someone goes into a bank with a gun, all right, and they hold up the bank. It's a robbery. The instrumentality of the robbery is the gun. Right? Gun goes off. Person teller is hurt or killed. Are you saying that in that instance couldn't be prosecuted for both of those charges because the instrumentality of accomplishing the objective of both crimes was indeed the gun?
Well, there's two separate acts in that instance. Going into the bank carrying the gun, which is itself just the act of doing that's a crime, and then the second act of firing the gun is a separate act, and merely the fact that both of them involve the guns, both offenses involve a gun, doesn't make it the same act. There were two separate acts, clear, distinct acts that were prosecuted in that case, and it's proper to prosecute separately in that case. Here, single act, under any rational kind of reasoning or analysis of...
Is it a single act because, going back to the Davis case, he's driving under the influence. It doesn't go very far before he hits white. This court said he was driving under the influence. The victim of that crime was essentially the Commonwealth. Then he actually hits the victim, Mr. White, and the victim of that crime is Mr. White. In this case, if you're, you know, riding your bike and I turn in your direction to try to scare you or for whatever reason, but I don't hit you, haven't I already done something involving improper driving or something in turning away from where I should have been driving in the first place before I actually hit you? So the victim in this case for improper driving being the Commonwealth, and the victim of the unlawful wounding being her former boyfriend.
If we look at the summary of the facts that was proffered at the time of the conditional plea, the evidence says she's sitting still. She waited until Mr. Neal rode in her path, at which time she accelerated, causing her vehicle to strike Mr. Neal in his bicycle. So there are no two separate acts of, well, she first committed a reckless driving or an improper driving by turning in his direction. The act was waiting, then accelerating. One act. And it's hard to conceive how this constitutes two separate acts that, well, the waiting constituted improper driving. That wasn't
it. You're in your rebuttal time if you want to save some of it, but you're free to go ahead if you'd like, but you've only got about a minute left. So.
Yes, sir. I'm just simply going to proceed on, if I may. I would just simply note that the opinion letter did specifically note that there were the charge, the malicious wounding that reduced unlawful, rose from the same incident. The judge noted that they were prosecuted independently from each other. And the malicious wounding prosecution was a successive prosecution. So it can't be argued that it was some sort of simultaneous or not a separate proceeding or prosecution. I would submit the trial court plainly erred in applying the wrong standard. Blockberger does not apply, and that the it's the same act, same evidence in terms of time, situs, victim, and the nature of the act itself. It's just simply the same. And therefore, a statutory conviction of improper driving should have barred prosecution of the subsequent prosecution for proceeding for unlawful wounding. And that carries out the intent of the legislature very specifically. This is specifically the situation that is barred by statute. If it isn't, we are simply eviscerating any meaning to 192.294 at this point. And it's not the province of this court to eviscerate the legislature's statute.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Victoria Johnson here on behalf of the Commonwealth. This court should affirm the judgment below for the unlawful wounding conviction.
Does the Blockberger test apply here or not?
No, Your Honor. The Blockberger test is not the precise test to use in this case. Interestingly, you know, this prosecution would pass the Blockberger test, but instead the case law has focused on whether it is the same act, and in order to determine that, you look to see whether the convictions were supported by the same evidence. And there is a four-part test to determine that, and that's a conjunctive test. And in order for the prosecution to be barred, the proponent of the bar, I guess, would have to show all four of those parts of the test, all four prongs. And that is whether the time, situs, victims, and nature of the acts are all the same.
Who is the victim of the traffic offense?
I believe it's the Commonwealth, Your Honor.
And who's the victim of maiming?
The victim who was wounded. That's a crime against the person. So that prong is gone. The Commonwealth would prevail on that prong. And I think that the argument in this case is kind of focused up on the nature of the acts committed. And here, although the driving was a common instrumentality, as the court noted earlier, the nature of the acts are quite different.
Can you address Mr. Hayden's argument in response to my question that here the act seems to be either the same or almost the same, where she waits, he rides in front of her, she accelerates and hits him. So where's the improper driving part to the unlawful wounding? Whereas in the Davis case, he's at least driving briefly under the influence before he hits Mr. White.
Certainly, Your Honor. And I submit, you know, when things are close in time like that, it can be a little hard to draw the line. I submit that turning your car around and aiming it at someone is improper. That is an improper act. You don't drive that way.
And then hitting them
is a separate act. So I think that those are two separate acts, and that falls under kind of the nature.
She tried to scare him by turning the car around and heading toward him, but then stopped before she hit him.
Right, and that would be an improper act. That would be improper driving, but it wouldn't be a maiming. It wouldn't fall under the unlawful wounding statute.
Do you believe that resolving this case requires this court to go through an analysis of the legislative intent of both of the statutes at issue here?
No, Your Honor, I don't. And the reason that I say that, again, is because the case law hasn't, under 294, hasn't focused up on the legislative intent. Instead, it examines that same evidence test. However, having said that, I submit that the legislative intent would support, you know, doing that analysis would support affirmance.
Do you think that using that analysis would be beneficial to the perspective of the bench and the bar as far as resolving these kinds of cases? That's a theoretical question. No.
It is a theoretical question, Your Honor. I submit that And I'm saying this with all respect. I submit that it could be confusing to the bench and the bar maybe to apply the Blockberger test or the legislative analysis because it is a very slightly different test under the statute and under the constitutional double jeopardy Blockberger world.
So you think the same act analysis is better?
I think that that is the correct analysis, Your Honor, and I respectfully, I believe the Commonwealth wins either way because these two prosecutions would pass the Blockberger test, but looking at kind of the other cases that I cited on brief, those cases applied the same evidence test, and because the victims differ and the nature of the acts are different, and perhaps, Your Honor, going through the legislative intent under the nature of the acts prong would be helpful to kind of explain how we see the natures of the act differently. That might be a way to analyze it as well. And I don't know if that answered your question.
It did.
Okay. If the court has further questions, I'm happy to answer them. But otherwise, I'd rest on my brief and ask to affirm.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions, Judge Frank?
No, thank you.
Judge Beals?
No further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. The matter is submitted. We'll come down and greet counsel.
All right.